You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Maybe it was an iguana.
It was no iguana.
Maybe a... You know how they say there are alligators in the sewers?
Alligators in the sewers.
All we're trying to say is maybe you just probably imagined it.
I couldn't have imagined it.
Maybe it was a pervert or deformed kid or something.
A deformed kid.
Maybe an elf or a leprechaun.
It was nothing like that, penis breath!
Elliot! Sit down.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wolfman's got nerves!
Make love in the hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 120 for the 19th of February, 2011. I've got to say, before we go any further, I was actually thinking about what you said last week, Josh, and I was thinking about we should start the show slightly differently. And I was thinking, what voices could we start the show in? I was thinking we could do it like Marvin the Martian or, you know, welcome to Film Actually. Isn't that nice? You know, anyway, I'm David McVan.
Just do the whole show like that. Just deadpan and don't tell anyone. Just be like, well, hello.
Josh was saying that we should start with some sort of distinguished good evening. Welcome to Film Actually.
I just want to start one episode where we cut away and, like, even the people that are watching live, like, aren't aware of it. And in the black, in, like, 30 seconds, we just slide across two armchairs and just sit down with no table at all and just be like, good evening. Good
with,
evening.
Like, a fireplace in the background.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Big leathered armchairs.
That would be cool.
And, of course,
it?
Because we're on low budget, it'll just be a drawing I've
done. No, it'd be like a TV with a fire. Anyway, I'm David McVay. I'm joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm still really hot.
Yeah, me too. It's just getting hot.
It's just, like, mind-numbingly hot. So, you know, like, let's try and get
sticky.
This done.
Yeah, we actually just finished recording the Geek Show, and we said we'll make this a quick one because it's hot. Hour and a half later, we're still going. Anyway, Celine Roberts, welcome back.
Hi.
How you doing, Celine?
Good.
It's been a while since you've been on there.
It has. I've had lots of shit on. Speaking of, I should plug that at the end of the show.
You
hey?
May well but, like, and truly plug that anytime you want to.
Happening and shit.
It's all that art crap. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. All right.
Do we'll get back. We'll like get back. Art?
We'll get back to the art crap in a minute. This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of GeekActually.com. We don't have to explain this one with the Geek Show. We have to explain what it's all about. This is about movies. We do movies, and this week we are going to review another Oscar bait film. We are going to review The Fighter. Now, I know this is a little bit late for even our Australian listeners, because it opened several weeks ago now. Things got in the way, and I think it's fair to say that Josh and I both kind of looked at this film going, it feels like homework.
And I get into my review, I'll explain all the reasons.
Yeah, and we'll come back to that a little bit later on. But we finally watched it, and we are going to finally talk about it. We are trying to make a bid to watch all 10 films nominated, so I think we're almost there. I think we might almost be there. Anyway, so yes, we will be reviewing The Fighter. We also have a little bit of film news in our Entertainment Buzz section, which includes, of course, the new Thor trailer, which got released this week. Thor, as you know, has kind of underwhelmed us a little bit. So we actually have the new trailer, which got released. We'll talk about that. We also have a brand new list of five, because we're doing The Fighter. I thought, let's do a list of five sports movies.
You know, Makes sense.
Sports films is easy, you know? So the first question that Josh said was, why not make it fight films? And I thought, you know what? There aren't actually great fight films, and we'd end up with the same films.
Well, I've got interesting points to bring up to that as well when we get to that part of the show. So, yeah.
We'll come back to all of that in a minute. First thing that we're going to do is we have a new little section that we've been doing for the last few weeks, and it seems to be going along so well. We'll continue on with it, which, of course, is what we've been watching all this week because we are film geeks. And we actually have another film that we've all seen.
Yes.
Because we watched a whole bunch. I watched Congo the other day, which was a
blast
from
Brilliant.
The past. Haven't watched it in a while. And my lovely wife, Katie, was the first one to point out that this film should be called The Film with the Strange Accents, because everybody seems to have some sort of weird accent in it. We've got...
But you can never tell what the accents are. She's like, I am trying to sound foreign.
Yeah, exactly. We've got Tim Curry doing something like Transylvania or something like that. We've got Ernie Hudson, I should say, doing 1930s African white hunter British, you know, what the hell is that all about, right? And Katie actually said, it's almost like he watched lots of old 30s movies. Safari movies and went, yes, that's how I should talk. Pip, pip, cheerio. Yeah. And it's like, and then of course you've got Amy. Beautiful, nice gorilla. So anyway, it's a trashy film.
Oh, yeah.
But I got to say, it actually has one of my favorite lines, probably of the last 20 years, which is when Laura Linney fires up that laser at the end. And she goes, we're getting out of here. He says, what about them? She goes, put them on the endangered species list.
This is like a conservationist being like, yeah, fuck nature.
Put them on the endangered species list. I just love that line. That's one of those fuck yeah moments. You know, and then, of course, she starts cutting them in half with this laser. Yep. So it's great stuff. But it is a trashy film. Mm. And it's almost like when Jurassic Park came out, they decided, we need every Michael Crichton novel there is turned into a movie, and we ended up with Congo, Sphere, and what was that time travel one that had Billy Connolly in it? Timeline? Is that what it's called? I want to say.
Oh, time travel with
Where they go back to medieval ages.
Oh, was that a Michael Crichton?
Michael Crichton as well.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, it's directed by Richard Donner, no less.
Was that the one with Paul Walker?
Yes, that's the one.
Brilliant.
Oh, man. Brilliant stuff.
So, yeah, it's like they said, we need all the Michael Crichtons we can, and then they couldn't do it again.
I was about to raise that exact point, Callison, which is that Tim Curry makes every movie better.
Except when he's doing a Transylvania.
Are you kidding? That's like his best stuff. He's the only reason I would watch that again.
Anyway, so I quite enjoyed that. We've got Chris from Melbourne saying best fight scene in a movie history was John Carpenter's They Live. Yeah, not a sports film, but yes, a 10-minute punch-up is awesome in that film. It is an amazing moment. Okay, so I watched that and it's other several things I watched. We won't go into them all because we all saw Ninja.
Yeah.
And I think we really need to talk about Ninja for a second. Ninja is a straight-to-DVD / Blu-ray movie that came out, I think, in 2008 or 2009. Mm. I picked it up at one of our department stores for like $8. And I saw the cover, and I went, oh, this
looks
awesome.
Worth every cent.
Absolutely. And I said, this has got B-shit all over it, and I got to have a look at this. And interestingly enough, I was actually a little disappointed when I finished watching it because it wasn't bad enough. You know, it's like I was hoping
it was the right amount of bad, though. I think it was $8 worth of bad.
Yeah, but I wanted like I was hoping for staggeringly awful. You know, I was hoping for one of those films where you sit there and go, "Oh yeah, this is just so bad." And it actually is one of those films where it's B grade crap.
But
it's fun, you know?
To me, it's not even B-grade crap. It's more of like a giant TV episode. Like, that's the way I kind of look at it. It's shot the same way. The characters feel like that kind of thing that you'd get where it's like you don't aim for the high budget, you go for the next bracket down so that you can afford to continue to pay them.
Yeah.
All really good fighters, but none of them could act.
Yeah, pretty much. And then, of course, they had to have the G.I. Joe storyline of the Asian guy and the white guy who were kind of raised as brothers, but then they have to fight each other. One is left in shame. You know, it's like, I started going, I've seen this before.
Dude, it's been done so many times before. And it's funny because at the same time, it also has all these incredibly good aspects to it. Like, for instance, the fighting is incredibly good and the stunt team, like you were saying, are very well done. A lot of the shot work with, like, people running down the streets and having guns shot at them and stuff is really well done.
It's a really pretty film.
Yeah. And then on top of that, you've got real, like, Japanese actors with real credit behind them in this film.
I think the one you want to mention is Shokusugi.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Shokusugi, who literally has a really decent part in the film and does a really decent acting job. And you're like, dude, what are you doing here? Go away from this film.
Run, flee. Yeah, look, it looks pretty. We saw it on Blu-ray, so we got full benefit of Blu-ray. It's shot in what looks like something like a Red camera or something like that. It's beautifully shot. It's really, really pretty.
But it's just pretty shitty. You're forgetting that opening scene where it's like pan in on them all like fighting with sticks, and then they've like CG'd in this really bad like Japanese temple in the background.
I'm not talking about the CG, I'm just talking about the shot work in general. There's that one shot which is obviously CG background, but it actually looks, because it's so almost stylized, it actually looks pretty good. Where they're on the roof of that house at that one point, it's in the city and they're having the fight on the roof and the guy jumps off the roof and the whole background, like the vista of the background is behind them. And it's all really beautifully, like almost HDR type lighting to it. So it's obviously artificial, but it just looks really pretty. And you sit there going, boy, I would love to see these guys with some money. You know, yeah. I'd love to see these the filmmakers behind this. And in particular, I think Fox 4649 from Real Junkies actually pointed out. He'd like to say on one of my Twitter feed, he actually said what these guys, what the fight team could do with a bigger budget would be really interesting to have a look at.
Well, you know? like I've got a review coming, and one of my big points about it is that technically, when you look at it, you can't put it in the class of bad films. In my opinion, you actually can't. But the whole thing is, it's actually above average if you grade it as an action film. Because in the 80s, we accepted a shitload more.
Yes.
And anyone that turns around to me and goes, that's a fucking terrible movie, I'll be like, do you like these movies? Because if so, don't think you can judge.
Yeah, all you have to do is watch Runaway. You know, did you guys watch it?
Yeah, we watched Runaway.
All right, well, you guys watched Runaway as well. See, Runaway is another one where you sit there and go, here is a film that had great ideas. Once again, Michael Crichton, great ideas.
Oh, dude, and I see what you mean about Gene Simmons.
Yeah.
Awesome bad guy.
Awesome bad guy.
Awesome.
A little bit overplayed in the end, but, you know, it's okay. But here's a film that came out 5 to 10 years too soon. Because its concepts were beyond what the technology of the day was, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they're basically all the runaway robots are, you know, 3-foot-tall bread boxes.
No, dude, you know what I couldn't shake? You said bread boxes, but the thing that I couldn't shake, man, was the wife mother slash robot that they had in the house, you know, the one that does the cooking.
Who's supposed to do all the cooking, cleaning, everything, only has one little claw.
And you're like,
how?
Very simple meals, I would imagine. But no, she reminded me of a cigarette machine. You know, like it was just the front panel just looked like a cigarette
front
machine.
Front panel with a claw.
Yeah. Absolutely. That hadn't occurred to me, but yes. And the dicky little spiders, which of course, you know, we look at, you know, Minority Report now with those, you know, fantastic CG spiders, you go, that's what they wanted. That was the sort of technique
that
they wanted.
Well, because they had... There were actual robotic
spiders.
They were
spiders. All, that's how everything was practical.
Spiders.
You know?
It's
and,
like,
you know, it was
not?
Just it was just great seeing, you know, a good 2 hours worth of Tom Selleck again, man. I miss that
Mo,
dude.
Man.
Dude, it's not just the Mo, man.
Just for the Mo.
It's not just the Mo, man. It's just that he's just the nicest guy you've
he's
ever seen.
He's just such a gentleman
like,
the whole way through the film.
That's what he plays. Every role. He's one of those roles. He's like, you know, the Bruce Willis kind of thing. It's like he has one kind of film that he plays, and that's the really nice guy. It's just like Tom Selleck's always like, are you okay?
Yeah,
that's great. Let's keep doing this.
And instead of being sleazy, he's like, I'd like to take you out for a romantic meal and possibly we could hold hands. Just like, oh, Tom.
And I love there's that line where they're in the debugging machine and it's going down Kirstie Alley's body and pulling like every single one. And she goes, you got a lot of bugs. it's a great line. So Kirstie Alley, and I think probably her second film, it was early in her career. She was just done
she
Star Trek.
She still does that thing that I hate Kirstie Alley for doing, which is instead of acting when she gets really stressed, she does that thing where she cuts herself off. She peaks and her voice breaks and then she just cuts off and starts going like this. And I'm like, you do that in every film.
So you reckon she needs like a digital limiter on her to stop her from
Then it needs to be like a mark on her shirt. It's like, oh, she's about to hit it. Stop. Let's take the shot again. Yeah, no, I can't stand Kirstie Alley. Sorry.
So overall, what were your opinions of Runaway?
Like you, it's like, it's the kind of movie where if they this is a film that could really benefit from a remake.
Yes.
Yeah, like I would love to see them and just like tackling like iRobot style, you know, like if it had him in that sort of situation, then his job would have seemed a lot cooler and it would have had a lot
But it was interesting because in the film they also make it sound like his job doesn't mean much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because they actually said, what was your previous assignment? And she said, traffic. And he goes, and you thought this was a step up? So it's like the Runaway Squad were obviously like the lowest of the low that you could go to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because robots didn't malfunction, or that's the way it seemed like, because of the fact that when they're talking to the father outside the house, when like he goes to the first like decent leveled kind of situation, the guy's like, why would someone reprogram? It's like, you know, like it's the iRobot thing. It's where they believe that robots.
That's
have
a
no...
great scene, though. That scene. That, there's a lot of tension in that scene. I like
it's interesting because we put it on
because you don't even see it. That's the great thing about that. You don't actually see the robot until right at the end, and it's not until the end you start laughing
because it's the little bread box.
Exactly.
But that's the thing. It's kind of a pity because like it is. You do get this kind of really bad like 80s trash feel from it. But occasionally there are really intelligent points in this film. Like the line where he says he's like, oh, humans aren't perfect, relationships aren't perfect, therefore, and humans and make machines, therefore, why should machines exactly be perfect?
And it's just
which is so true.
Perfect line, because it's just like, I plan to take that in and use that at work every day when everybody's like, it should just work. I'm
I've lived
like,
by that philosophy
we make
throughout
yeah,
my
it's
teaching
like it's
years.
Made by humans. That's how right. is it going to be perfect?
Computers are going to be fundamentally flawed because we made them, and we are fundamentally
until,
flawed.
You yeah. know, computers make computers.
Yeah, but that's a whole different era.
And then they start to eat humans.
And then you
cut
have Watson,
flesh.
And yeah, the robot apocalypse is coming. Yep. Listen to our geek show for updates on that.
you think right. it's not coming, but every week we prove why you're wrong.
That's correct. Now, we also have to address some business, which is. Was here? What did I do with it? Here it is. Here it
put
is.
Put it underneath here. Yeah.
I have that copy of Commando sitting here. Competition closed yesterday. Our competition was in 25 words or less. What is Arnie's best film? Yep. And we have a winner. And our winner is James from Melbourne, who is in our chat room right now. And James's submission, I got to tell you, the reason why you win, James, is because you make us laugh. And if you make us laugh, you've got a good chance, all right?
Yep. And good chance. Maybe not the best chance.
Not because, you know, it depends on how hard we laugh. And if other people make us laugh harder, then they're going to have a better chance. Anyway, the point is, he says, hey, guys. Best Arnie movie is Total Recall, a real sci-fi film where Arnie has to play multiple characters and does it reasonably well considering skill set. And you're going to ask yourself at this point, but that didn't make me laugh. Because that was his official entry, but I'm taking his second point as the entry because he then said, wow, that's hard to do in 25 words. Could have done it in four, though. Girl with three tits. And I say, damn straight, you win yourself a copy. James, James from Melbourne, you win this wonderful second-hand, pre-used, pre-loved copy of Commando.
Pre-loved copy
of Commando. Just email us your postal address, and we'll send that out to you on Monday. So feedback at geekachi.com.
Well done, man.
Well done. Send us your postal address, and we will send that out to you on Monday, along with the winner of the Tron show. We're sending out their game on Monday as well. So, all right, so there you go. See? If we have one of these competitions, you too could win.
Shit happens and people win.
Yeah, people win stuff. You might win this secondhand beaten up copy of Commando. No,
maybe
joking.
Next week we can have like some used underwear
condition.
Or something.
It's a beautiful condition. It's I love my DVDs.
I've got some pairs of underwear if we're going to go with the... Just, no?
No.
No?
No. All right, so that's our Commando giveaway. Let's move into our feature film review this week. Oh, hello, my chair is going crazy again. This chair, the spring load, keeps coming unlocked. And I keep having to readjust. All right, there we go. Okay, now.
I just can't wait for the moment where he just falls.
You know what? That actually happened to me. I was sitting on my chair one day when I was living in Melbourne a long time ago. I had my one-year-old son in my lap.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And I'm sitting there, and one of my friends was on the other side of the table, and he describes it. All he saw was me sitting there and then me gone. Because the chair just gave way, and literally we just went over backwards. And my son was in my arms, so he was fine. But it was like we just went, woo! We just disappeared. The chair just gave out under us. Anyway, so...
It's that kind of thing where you immediately run over to see if they're okay, and when you see that they are, you burst
we're
out
all
laughing.
Laughing. And we're all laughing. And my son is laughing because he's going, ride, you know? Do it again, you know? Anyway, so... All right, so we are moving on to... We are moving on to our feature review, which is, of course, The Fighter. Now, this is directed by David O. Russell, written by Scott Silver, Paul Tamasi, I want to say, and Eric Johnson, based on a true story. Yeah. It stars Mark Wahlberg, Christian Bale, Amy Adams, and Melissa Leo. There are other members of the cast, but they're the biggies. It's also interesting to note that out of that cast, Christian Bale is nominated for Best Supporting Actor, Amy Adams is nominated in Best Actress, and Melissa Leo is nominated in Best Supporting Actress. So this has got some pedigree behind this film. David O. Russell is also nominated for Director, film is nominated for Best Film, etc., etc., etc. It's one of the big ones for this year. Okay, The Fighter is the real-life drama about boxer Irish Mickey Ward's unlikely road to the world light welterweight title. His Rocky-like rise was shepherded by half-brother Dickie, a boxer-turned-trainer who rebounded in life after nearly being KO'd by drugs and crime. Now, that is actually written, that synopsis was written by Anonymous on IMDb, but I had to modify it slightly because it wasn't quite fleshed out enough. But that's the basics of the story. Yeah. And here is the trailer. Now, I do apologize for this trailer. On the audio version, it will be complete, but we accidentally started playing it by mistake in the Geek Show. So for our live viewers, you're going to come into it a little bit into the trailer. But here's enough of the trailer for you to get the idea.
This is my younger brother.
You gotta help me finish this.
Taught him everything he knows.
You don't want to see where this fight is headed. Turn on over.
Bam! I'm still his trainer.
I have a fight next week.
And after I win, I'm gonna start making good money so you can live with me more days, okay?
Good luck, Daddy.
Don't hold your breath, Casey.
Bye, baby.
You pave streets, right?
Yeah, I do. And I'm a fighter.
I heard you were a stepping stone.
Oh, I mean, I had a few tough fights, but the next fight's gonna show who I am.
Yeah, and he's gonna lose that one, too. So move that sugar ass and give
him a... Don't disrespect her.
Mickey Ward is 31 years old. He's here because he needs the money.
Look at the size of that guy. He's got 20 pounds on me, Dickie.
You don't fight, nobody gets paid.
I'm quitting, Shelly. I'm done fighting. I don't need it anymore.
It's sad that you let them take it away from you.
I was embarrassed. I told everybody I was going to win that fight and get back on track. I'm sick of being a disappointment.
Look, Mick, nobody's got heart like you. You're a very talented fighter.
I want to give you a real shot. Make one last run at this thing before it's too late.
What about my brother? He's taught me everything I know. I can't do it without him.
With all due respect, he's too much trouble.
Dickie, get on the ground right now!
He's a fighter! Break his hand!
Mick, I was doing it for you.
You did it for me? What, this?
Do me a favor, don't do nothing for me no more, okay?
You ready for a title shot?
Not a stepping stone anymore.
He's using you.
You can't beat me. You had a hard enough time beating you, and that's why you're in here.
We're gonna train, they gotta go.
Why am I the problem? I'm his blood, I'm his family!
You're crazy.
I'm the one fighting. Not you, not you, and not you. This is my shot at the title. I won't get another one after this.
Mickey has a chance to do something that I never did, and he needs me.
Okay, I'll see you in Mickey's corner.
This is your time.
I had my time in my blood. You don't have to.
You're Mickey Ward. You're Mickey Ward.
Okay, so that's the trailer to The Fighter. Mm. And as we said at the very beginning, it's taken us a while to get to this film. I don't know if there's something about this film, and I think I can sum it up in two words, and I'll come up to that in a second. But there's something about this film that, you know, everybody's been telling me how great it is, and they're all telling me how wonderful it is, and blah, 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 and all the rants that go along with it. And something about it has been holding me back. And the two words that I think have been holding me back are Mark Wahlberg. Mm. Because I'm not a huge Mark Wahlberg fan. And I just look at that film and I just go, oh, do I really? It's like 2 hours of homework to try and get to a Mark Wahlberg film. Let's face it, the man's last three films. I have seen his last three films and they've all been crap. Yeah. All right. We're talking Lovely Bones, Max Payne, and The Happening. All right?
I don't agree with you, but
trees are like coming at us, man.
What about the bees? Are we worried about
the bees?
Does
anyone care about the bees?
You don't agree with me that his last three films have been shit?
Lovely Bones. I thought his role in Lovely Bones was really good. But
we disagreed. I thought he was
flat. We disagreed on this before. Mm. So, yeah.
So we finally bit the bullet, though, because we knew we had to get to this film eventually, okay? And we had to get through it, and we've done it, and we've gone through it, and I texted Josh last night, and I said, I've just come out, and I just texted one word. I just said, interesting. Mm. And what I meant by that was, wow, I was actually really pleasantly surprised. Mm. You know, and not only was I pleasantly surprised by the film in general, and I expected Melissa Leo to be excellent, I expected Christian Bale to blow my socks off, that's not a problem. I actually like Mark Wahlberg.
But it's funny because about a quarter of the way through, it sort of clicked where I was like, he's actually really good casting. The person who cast Mark Wahlberg actually cast Mark Wahlberg because he has that dazed kind of, what's going on?
Look on his face all the time. Do you know who cast Mark Wahlberg?
Who?
Yeah, himself. He produced the film.
No way.
Yeah. So
see, it's sort of weird because I was just thinking that's brilliant casting. Like, Christian Bale is an amazing actor and did a fucking brilliant job. Mm. And then Mark Wahlberg just played this sort of slightly dopey character, but really well. Yeah. And I was sort of so pleasantly surprised. I gave him the right amount of lines.
Yep, Josh?
We didn't have to hear him talk too much.
It screams to me of the kind of situation of someone whose story he's really attached to, like somebody who he feels has followed his kind of lifestyle. Mm. Because Mark Wahlberg has always been the guy that's been told what to do. Like, you look through, right back to his history, like, when he was Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch, it's like, this was an 80s produced... mass market band. Like, that was their whole concept. Him with his shirt off, you know, rapping. It was white rapper, you know, snow globes, as they call them. You know, like, snowmen back then were never taken seriously, but it's that whole thing that he just kept struggling and struggling and struggling and pushing. Because
you mean nobody took Ice? Ice, what was his name? Ice?
Vanilla
seriously?
Ice, seriously? Ice, no.
Ice, baby.
Yeah. Anyway, we won't go into that. The point was, the guy has spent his entire life playing those playing whatever characters he could get. Like, he's never had the power in Hollywood, and I think...
Until the last decade, though, because he's been producing for the last decade.
Exactly.
He produces Entourage, let's not forget, which is his show, which is phenomenally successful. I don't like Entourage very much.
Yeah, don't worry.
Yeah, I've never been able to...
You're in a room of Entourage haters here,
I've never been able to quite figure out what the attraction to Entourage is, but it is phenomenally successful. Mm. And he produces, or at least associate produces, almost everything that he's been in lately. Yeah. So he actually has got a lot of power. But what I think is finally happening here is he's finally... And I don't know if this is true, and I don't know the man, but what I'm seeing is that he's finally going, the most successful role I have ever been in was Boogie Nights.
Mm. Yeah.
What did I play in Boogie Nights? I played kind of stupid,
naive,
full of heart.
Pushover, you know? Yeah.
And I did that really well, and everybody loved me for doing that, and I've been trying to do something else for all this time, and there's pushback on that, you know? And now, with this character, he is gone back to that kind of stupid, kind of shy, kind
and
of quiet.
And it suits him.
Full of heart, you know? And you go, and that suits you so well.
That's the thing.
It's
like,
perfect casting.
I actually enjoy watching him, and I've apart from Boogie Nights never enjoyed
I believed his character
totally
100%, you know.
Well, that's the thing, I completely disagree with you guys, because I've liked him in a lot of things, and it's always because he just plays a stupid action guy. Like, that is what he plays, like in stupid films like The Big Hit and stuff like this. His character is always just the guy that runs around and does a lot of action-based stuff and usually has very little lines, where everyone else outstrikes him with the lines. Whereas he stands to his own in this film, because for 90% of the film, he's not the main person.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is why it works, because when he does have those few lines, they're not that well done. Like, I would never put him in a category for winning an Oscar for his performance.
And thus he's not nominated.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, it's not the reason that he is popular in this film. He hasn't risen to any amazing step. What's happened is his role, his lines become that much more powerful, because the few times he has to say something are really important moments in the film that change everyone else's feeling on screen, and everyone else acts differently because of it. Mm. So it's like, he is the producer character in the film. Like, he sits in the background, everything else kind of happens, and he just struggles hard.
But there is a turning point in the film where he finally does stand up for himself.
Yeah.
And that could have been the fatal flaw of this film, because he is breaking out of the character that we're attaching to. But he does it. He pulls it off, and he actually manages to make that work
well. I like the fact that that is a really good scene, because I like the fact that he doesn't just kind of, like, take sides like people usually do when they're that quiet. They don't sort of pick a side and go, no, I'm going to side with this. He turns on everyone and just goes, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, and fuck you. Yeah. This is me. I'm doing this. And I like the fact that it's not like you're emotionally torn at this point, like tears are running out of your eyes for him, but you're kind of like, fucking A, man.
Yeah.
Do it. And, like, the great thing about it is then the rest of the cast really stands together. Mm. It's like, he is the smallest part in the film, yet the most crucial part.
Well, he's the linchpin that holds it together.
Mm. That's the great thing about him having that dopey heart. It's that heart that when... He's not a very powerful actor, but that heart comes through when he's like, fuck y'all, I'm going to do what I need to do. And that actually worked surprisingly well.
Yes.
I think my other favorite thing about it was the fact that when you actually sit down and look about it afterwards, I said it to you, it was one of the first things I said when I called you, is the most amazing thing about this is it breaks those horrible cliches that are sports films.
Mm.
It's not guy does well, then breaks down, turns to drugs, and then fights his way back up to be awesome. Mm. Or guy has, basically the important thing is, okay, has a shot, fails, works back up, gets redemption. It's like, that's not what the story's about. Mm. And it's just so nice to see any other sports situation. And I think that the story is a really intriguing story. Definitely. And the characters are so great. And I think we all have to have a little bit of a talk about what is obviously the big part of this film, which is Christian Bale.
Yeah, Christian Bale, rightly nominated for Best Supporting Actor this year. This performance is phenomenal. Not only does he create this amazing character and then just live it for the course of the entire film. As a minor spoiler, there is actually a clip in the end credits which actually shows the real brothers nowadays.
It's uncanny.
Yeah, and even though they don't look exactly the same because these guys are obviously older now, the characterization of both of them is perfect.
Yeah.
You know? And he's got that whole hyperactive, overactive,
like,
you know?
Oh, look, there's a butterfly, and oh, no, I'm going to look over here now. It's like, shiny object, you know? Sort of like he's all over the place.
It's amazing. And his descent into the whole crack taking and it is just amazing. There is actually, and funny, because I was actually thinking to myself as I'm watching, I'm going, there's a real Aronofsky feel to some of this. And
but it's not as in your face.
No,
full
but to
on.
Find out that Aronofsky co-produced the film, you sit there and go, I can see the Aronofsky influence here, because it's got that kind of gritty realism to all of that.
Yeah.
And it's not disturbing like a Requiem for a Dream, but it's enough of it where you sit there and go, wow, you just are a burnout.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, the thing that I liked is it's not that, again, another cliche that it breaks, is it's not that cliche style of drug taking where it's like people sprang out on the couch and blood dripping out of them and stuff like this. It's the realistic depiction of what these people are like. They still function on a day-to-day level. If they couldn't, they would be crack addicts hidden in, you know, dumpsters. It's not what they are.
But also that kind of communal sense, like we're all going to take drugs together and we're going to stick in this
and
together.
And like, hey man,
he comes out of prison and Linus, plot spoiler, goes back to the crack house and they all go, come upstairs, man. And they're like, come on, we'll party.
Which is from behind him, and it actually just pans from one side to the other across, and they're all going, it's done really well because it's not hugely obvious, but they are all gesturing, you know, this really kind of like, all you've got to do is walk back inside, and it's that really inviting state, and yet they've done that really well.
Although
and
it's also, kind of repulsive, that one guy who's rolling the deal around in his mouth, and he's like going, come on in, poking it out, and he's there going, that's really appetizing.
Yeah. But then you see them when they talk and they act like they're brothers and stuff, and it's like they're so friendly with each other, yet it's kind of drugs that holds them together. Like, it was done really well in a really un-cliché manner.
Exactly, and also it's just that kind of empty house and just a bunch of people sitting around on couches. Like, that is more realistic than, you know, like the dude with the arm and the giant infection, stuff like that. Look, these people do
it's
exist.
It's slightly more realistic than the world that Rock and Roller set up with the whole, you know, drapes and, you know, the whole, you know... Which I'm sure, you know, there are crack houses that get to this point, but this isn't
the
that
really bad crack
this
house.
Isn't that story.
It's the realistic kind of this is the everyday kind of a person. And I really like and the thing that I really loved about the film is for the first quarter you are kind of confused as to who the film's about.
Yeah.
Like there is that part of you that's going,
but
I
also,
know that it's not.
Yeah, but it's interesting you say that, because it's also, I think, the family is confused as to who it, because there's that turning point where Mark Wahlberg actually says to his mother, I thought this was about me. You know?
It's like, I'm your son as well.
You know, and it's like, I think everybody is confused as to who it's actually about.
And the other thing that I love is that there's no black and white to this film, which is just a lovely change. Because it's like sports films as a whole are always this incredible kind of, you know, give up anyone you know that does drugs, fight hard, don't, you know, just complete focus. Nothing from that life will ever help you. And it's just like it's very patriotic in a way. It's very kind of like, I'm not using the term against Americans, but, you know, that like American patriotism kind of thing. It's like sports patriotism is you do things like this and you just abandon anything that gets in your way. Whereas I love the fact that at the three-quarter mark, it dawned on me as a person watching the film to kind of sit there and go, he actually does need his brother. And it's like these films so often just turn on everyone that has any flaw.
Yeah, because it's like he makes that break and basically says, I'm going to leave the family and go to my own. And so in the normal sports convention, you'd say now he goes off and succeeds.
Yeah, and
he finally managed to undo the shackles of that family life. But no, he comes back to that.
And I love the fact that he establishes that, but then there's that part of him that goes, look, you guys have got the physical training down. You will keep me safe. But he has the knowledge better than anyone in this room about how to fight. And it's like the fact that they all come together for that really makes the whole family win. And it's a great moment because it's so much more than just the fight. It's the win for the whole family. Like, everyone changes tone at that point.
Yeah, I think we should also stress at this point, for those who, because there are a lot of people out there, I know, like my mother is one, for instance, who doesn't like sports films.
Yeah.
Right? She goes, I don't want to go see sports. This film is really interesting in the sense that the boxing is actually backseat.
Mm.
The boxing is actually, there's actually not that much boxing in it to start with. And when you do the boxing matches, they're not actually that long, and you actually find yourself not even really paying that much attention during the boxing, because what you really want to see is what's outside of the ring. And it's about the family, and it's about the drama, and it's about the characters and their interactions with each other. The boxing is just there as a vehicle. And for me, and we'll slightly change gears, for me, we disagree, Josh and I disagree on this, but for me,
heavily,
it's actually slightly the weak point of the film. Is I don't, the boxing scenes for me weren't 100% sold.
See, I enjoy watching men who are burly do what burly men should do, which is fight. And so I really enjoy watching boxing. So I actually enjoyed the scenes where he is getting taken down. And like, they've paid a lot of attention to boxing as a sport anyway. Like, you can see they've trained and they've got proper moves down. Yeah, the blocking and the footwork and everything.
There is actually the point where, and it's probably a flaw of me as a person, but there is a point where you sit there and go, we have been so conditioned with movies on how we should be perceiving sports on screen that when, I'm sure David O. Russell and his crew did all this research to make it the most realistic boxing match ever, but unfortunately realistic doesn't look right on screen anymore because we're so used to the movie's version of boxing. You know
slow
what I mean?
Motion.
And so, well, not even, well, there was actually a couple slow motion shots in this, but it wasn't even the slow motion as such. It was just, I actually found, and this is, once again, personal subjective opinion with all film, I actually found that I kind of wanted them to get out of the boxing ring. I was never particularly interested in the boxing, and I found myself not even getting that aroused by the boxing. You know,
but I've got to say, you wouldn't sit down and watch a boxing match, would you?
No, but I love a good boxing film.
Yeah, so, no, but that's the interesting thing, because you're watching it from a film point of
view. But that's, I'm watching a film, and I'm not watching a boxing match.
But that doesn't mean that they can't do, like, to be honest, as someone that watches boxing and really enjoys it, I think that they nailed it, because it's like, when I'm watching it, I'm sitting there, and there was a part of me going, like, like you get in a boxing fit.
As an example, like it was a sports
The
match.
Last shot, even going to the point where, and this is not spoiler, so we won't say what it is, but even going to the point where they go to a freeze frame in that last shot is saying to the audience, you should be all, you know, cheering and roused by his success at this point. Yeah. And I wasn't. And at this point, I was kind of like, okay, we're done.
Because it's undertoned. Those sort of hits, like, it's like, I hate boxing films, which is the interesting contradiction, because when I watch it, I'm like, this is so stupid. Mm. Like, it's like, that is not what boxing's like. Boxing isn't these ginormous swinging punches and stuff like that.
But that's what makes a good movie.
No, but it's about boxing, and it's trying to be a realistic depiction of boxing.
And
they've
based
nailed
on a true
it
story,
as it is.
Know.
It's like, when these little hits, which you're going, well, that,
yeah, but Raging Bull is a true story as well, but Raging Bull's boxing moments were much more cinematic.
Yeah, you know? But, like, I don't think it fails because, like, I mean, I don't think anyone I've spoken to so far sits there and goes, no, it was a terrible boxing scene. It's like, it's good enough, and if you understand anything about fighting, those hits are so much more realistic than any hit you've seen in Rocky or Raging Bull or anything like this. When you see a guy fall because of a punch, I believe it. Like, I'm actually like, that guy went down because that punch knocked the crap out your skull. And it's like, these ginormous haymakers don't happen.
Yeah, I look at it and go, it can be as realistic as it wants to be. If we watched a real shootout in the street, it is nowhere near as exciting as something as Lethal Weapon. We go to see a movie to have a movie. You
but
know
at
what I mean?
The same time, and we can have it both ways.
We can, but the point is that there is what brings that rah-rah moment, what brings that moment of jubilation, what brings that moment of cheering on the guy's win is not the way it's shot. It's the emotion behind it. And the problem is, I didn't feel
the
emotion.
But the film isn't about that, though.
Yeah,
the film is not a fighting
is,
film. The film is a drama. And
my
that's what
argument
I said when
is
it finished.
That the win for me is not the final punch in that scene, it is the it is everyone in the ring after it.
Yeah,
it's like to
or the
me,
shot after
it,
when they're the, sitting on the couch talking to the documentary maker.
Yeah no, but like I mean, but the actual win, like where you get excited, was not for me the final punch. I didn't care whether he win or lost, won or lost. It, for me, it was the fact that everything else that happens in that like 10 seconds afterwards, with everyone just jumping the ring, people hugging that were not close enough to do that before this fight. It's like everyone's got together, and as a family, they have achieved something. The fighting is the smallest part of it.
Yeah. So Snake Oz in our chat room has just said, what? Rocky's not real?
But Rambo is, weirdly.
Yeah. But yeah, no, that's what, for me, that was the whole thing. It's like, boxing is one of those sports where it's like these people go through hell and all this sort of stuff. Mm. And like, realistically, anyone that sits down and watches boxing that isn't interested in fighting just sits there and goes, this is real boring. When do they do the big hits? Yeah. And you're like, there is no big hit. It's hours of wearing him down. And it's like, it showed that more than it did anything else. And you always noticed it was like the blood in the scenes that there are in certain bits of this thing are more focused on than the actual fight. Because it's like, it's about the terror of what's happening. It's like, the fight is the smallest part of this film. And I think that they've shot it intentionally like that because they don't want the win to be that. They don't want...
It's about the family. Yeah,
exactly.
And
it's
the
about
experience
the
and the people.
And the experience. And it's like, by doing that, you take away from what is the fight. It's like, the fight is just something that happened. It's about the personal journey of Mark Wahlberg's character.
And also the personal struggle between him and his brother and his mother and his girlfriend and that whole group of people. It's not about him winning a fight.
The sisters.
And the sisters. And these characters who are just so repulsive yet so brilliant at the same time. Like, I'm sorry, we haven't mentioned the mother yet.
Yeah,
but the whole way through this film, I was just amazed at how much of a manipulative bitch she was. And she played it ridiculously well. Like, yeah,
Melissa Leo is a wonderful actress.
Oh, and she's just so repulsive, and the sisters are so repulsive, and you just want to punch every single one of them. Like,
the casting is brilliant in this film. There is no doubt about it. They actually
whoever did hair and makeup, kudos.
Yeah, they found the most repulsive gaggle of girls, and we're not talking about physically here, although that's part of it. Yeah. But
some
just
of them weren't even bad looking. It's just the
personality
hair
and the whole. They're like this little gaggle of birds that sit on the
and how they chime in the background all the time. Like, what the fuck is an MTV girl? It's a slag. It's a whore. And they're all in the background, kind of like, yeah, like backing each other up and stuff. And you're just like,
they're horrible. And they kind of follow the mother around. There's this little entourage around the mother, and you know, you just sit there and look at it. Melissa Leo, by the way, is also in Kevin Smith's Red State. I'm really looking forward to her performance in that as well. But yeah, she's wonderful. It's unfortunate that I don't think she's going to win the Oscar this year, but she is really good. I think this film, though, can be said that it's Christian Bale's film. This film,
but in the same way that the real life story is as well. It's
this
like
film is about
that,
him, and it's about his destructive personality that was ultimately redeemed. And he came on his comeback to help his brother. Hello, that's a car outside with a very noisy horn. So just ignore that.
moving right along.
Look, I sit there and I go, would you shut up? I sit there and I go on about the fight scenes not quite working for me. But that's a minor quibble. And you know, it's just they didn't quite work for me. They obviously work for Josh. So it's going to be different people are going to get, and for you too, Celine. So there's going to be different people who are going to get different things out of this film. That being said, I really liked the film. And the fight scene's not quite working for me as a minor quibble because the performances are so good and the script is so good and the casting is so good and the capturing of period is so good that it's really watchable. And you just sit there just glued to it going, where is this family going to go next? And we should also mention Amy Adams, who's also been nominated for an Oscar as well, as the girlfriend. I love Amy Adams.
Yeah.
And she has just gone from one film to the next. And you sit there and go, boy, there's nothing this girl can't do at this point. And her taking on the gaggle of sisters.
Oh, just that one she breaks someone, chicks nose, I was like, yes!
you sit there and go, yeah, good on you. And she has this core strength. But even her strength is tested by this family. Which is so overbearing.
Well, it's interesting because at first you're like, she's the redeeming factor for him. Like, she's this, like, amazing sort of, I'm going to take him out of the hole. But then there's this point halfway through where you go, you are as bad as they are.
Yeah.
Like, if you're not under control.
But Christian Bale says that at that point when he goes to her house where she's like, you need to admit that you didn't beat Dan Sugar Ray, he tripped. And he's like, well, yeah, if I'm going to admit that, you need to admit that your life is shit as well. You're a college dropout. You work at a bar. Like, what makes you so fucking sugar-coated? And she's like, yeah, good point.
Yeah. It's just sort of like...
Well, she doesn't say that because just wouldn't have in her character's nature. But I love that. There's
in paraphrasing.
She kind of goes, all right, well, I'll accept that if you accept that you're also shit. And everyone kind of goes, yeah, we're all shit, but, you know, that's kind of all we've got. So.
But what I love is it's all said with no actual admittance. It's like everyone just backs down. Instead of everyone kind of admitting anything because, like, these people are hard people. Like, they come from hard neighborhoods. Yeah. They come from, you know, tough situations. None of them are going to admit to being wrong, but all of them are going to sit there and go, let's put aside what we have so that we can fix something else.
Find one unified
but I love
goal,
the fact that it's never said, and I think that that was so strong because it's like both characters are like, look, I know who I am and you know who you are, but this isn't about us.
Yeah, exactly.
And I like that because I thought that that really worked.
And I think the film also has a really subtle little scene that just shows, because the family is all so similar to each other, there's one little subtle scene in the film where you kind of go, yeah, this family is so screwed up and they just pass it on next generation to next generation, which is where Christian Bale is pounding the locker and his son walks over and just starts going bang, 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 bang on the locker.
What I love is there's no, like a normal movie would then turn around and sort of have him look down at the kid and be like, oh God, what have I done? But in this, no, it's just life.
No, it's just life. He just does it. You know, it's like he's just go.
There are points when the kid comes in and like the mother goes, "I told you to get that baby out of here." And it's like at every single other point in the film, she's cradling him cuddling him and coddling him and being protective over him. And then you know when she's talking business, she's like, "Get him the fuck out."
No, that's scene where we get him out of there. Wasn't that? That was the business scene.
Yeah.
But there's also a scene where she's telling him to go back to bed because of the special.
Yeah, but in that she's a lot less yelling. Yeah. She's very like, "Oh no, sweetie, go to bed," because it's kind of very full on what's happening. But in this part, she's like, "I'm not going to be the fucking mother. You get that kid out of here."
Yeah.
It's sort of this really interesting sort of.
And there's the going back to Christian Bale's performance very quickly. The scene where the HBO special about crack in America is being shown in the jail, and he comes out and he's all like, "I'm Hollywood, I'm on TV, and isn't this fantastic?" And he sits down, and the whole, you know, the whole jail is basically watching the HBO special, and it's like halfway through the HBO special, it dawns on him, what a fuckwit he is, and how bad, and you, and he just there's a, where he stands, says, "Turn it off, I don't want to," you know,
snaps.
It's like you can just see the transition point. At that one moment where everything changes in that one night, everything in the film changes, you know? And it's an amazing scene how everybody is watching it. It's such a small town. Everybody is watching it. Everybody is affected by that moment, you know? No, it's a great film. I think that David O. Russell has done a really good job pulling this together. David O. Russell is a funny one because he's not one of my favorite directors. He's hit and miss with me. I didn't like I love Huckabees very much, but I loved Three Kings, you know? And so it's like he's a really hit and miss, and now he's doing, there's talk that after his, not his next film, but the one after will be the Uncharted film, and Mark Wahlberg, now that we've seen this, still not right for Drake, though.
No.
You know, it's like...
Still not right for Drake.
Still not right for Drake, but it gives me a little bit more confidence in David O. Russell to handle Uncharted. I don't know if his choice in casting is the greatest choice in the world, but that's a whole different issue. All right, final wrap-ups. Recommended?
I would definitely recommend it, and for people who don't like sports films, I would say, well, no, this is a drama more than anything else, and you'll come out of it, and it will not be about... It's the boxing, and you might be a bit bored in the boxing scenes, but they're really short, and it's more about the drama and more about the people. So I'd recommend it to people who enjoy dramas and enjoy good acting and enjoy a good story.
Fantastic. Josh?
Anyone. I think this film just transcends everything that is the staples of its genre. It moves into be a lot more than either. Like, it's just, it's one of those great movies that you only get once or twice a year where you just leave the experience feeling better about life, because it's like it's just one of those personal struggle stories that everyone can relate to. And I think for that reason alone, everyone should watch this film.
Yeah, I agree. I recommend it to everybody. As I've got a couple of quibbles about the boxing scenes, but as Selena's already so eloquently put, they're very short and there's not very many. So they don't really affect the film.
Even if you don't like those scenes, it's not going to be.
That's not your bit.
It's not going to really, it's not going to really ruin the film.
It's not going to affect it at all. I love the film. I found it mesmerizing to watch it. Look, I'm a great admirer of great scripting, great acting, and this film is a tour de force in both. And I recommend this film to everybody. I think it's well worth seeing. If you can still see it in the cinema in particular, because some of this film In very loud environments. It's in boxing rings. It's in gyms that are very loud. And I would imagine that if watching it in a situation where you don't have the big 6.5, you know, 6.1 Dolby stereo and all this stuff, you're going to lose a little bit of what those performances are about. So, but yeah, it's yeah, well worth seeing cinema dollars. And I will say, weeks after its release, still a packed cinema. So, you know, it's like it's still doing good business. Well worth going to have a look at. Okay, let's move on to some entertainment buzz and say he always said he would be back. And Arnold Schwarzenegger
is back.
The Governator has now said that he is seriously considering acting offers. Apparently his agent has been on his back now for a while. And he just recently tweeted out, his exact tweet was, "Exciting news! Friends at CAA have been asking me for 7 years when they can take offers seriously. Gave them the green light today."
Wow. Oh,
that's cool.
All right, so Schwarzenegger's
going back,
back
to what he should go back to as
the question
well
is,
as
though,
concerned.
What should he come back in? I mean, the man is too old now to go and play the super action stars that he used to star in. You know,
so what's he going to do?
And he's had a heart condition and open heart surgery and all this sort of stuff since being governor. So what?
You know? Maybe he's just gotten like a ridiculous amount of cameo roles, like enough to warrant.
What he needs to do is get Clint Eastwood's career now. He needs to find those old man roles that really suit him. Apparently, there's one role that he is in negotiations with. I forget what it's called, where he's going to play basically a Nazi officer in World War II who is ordered to kill kids in this place, and he refuses and saves the kids or something like that. So that could be interesting, you know?
Oh, God, I'm just imagining Kindergarten Cop meets, like, Commando or something.
I have no problem with that.
No, I
mean, I just wanted to put that out there.
Gosh, your mouth was
fantastic. Fantastic. So you're meaning I'm getting all the fun of Kindergarten Cop with the awesomeness that is Commando? Maybe we can even throw in Vernon Troy again. Dude, this would be the best
movie
ever.
And that's because he's been waiting, John.
Dude, that would be that can be your trailer right there. You just have, "I'll be back," and you just have him, and then it's just like, Commando 2.
Oh, dear. Okay, so that's the Schwarzenegger. All right, so that's the Schwarzenegger news. Let's move on to Matthew Vaughn. And now we may have Schwarzenegger's next film. Because Matthew Vaughn, apparently, after he... I'm speculating here, okay? But I'm saying this could be perfect for Schwarzenegger. Matthew Vaughn apparently is working on his next film after X-Men. It won't be Kick-Ass 2, as Mark Millar would like to think. Remember Mark Millar, weeks ago, he was saying, "Yeah, it's all greenlit, it's all go." Yeah. No, Matthew Vaughn is actually not even thinking about it at this point. Apparently, though, he is thinking about a new comic book, a new thing. I don't even know how new this comic book is, but I want to see if I can try and find it. It's called The Golden Age, and it's about a bunch of retired superheroes. He's going from the teenagers of Kick-Ass to the retired superheroes of the Golden Age. And all I can think is, Schwarzenegger would be good for that.
Yeah. That would be awesome.
That would be awesome. But apparently, he's actually looking for people like Clint Eastwood and stuff like that to come and be in it. Clint Eastwood says he's not acting anymore. Yeah. He's only directing. But Matthew Vaughn, if anybody could get Clint Eastwood out of retirement...
Well, I think it's one of those films that really intrigues him. Like, you know, the kind of film that he would jump at, like the idea of like, it's that whole, it's the, basically the film's concept is Gran Torino all over again. Like, I mean, it's and the,
Now, Matthew Vaughn, as we know, is an uber producer, right? As well as a great director. But I mean, this guy is a producer extraordinaire. Yeah. Apparently his wish list, let's see how many of these he gets. For Golden Age, his wish list is Clint Eastwood, Jack Nicholson, and Warren Beatty.
Oh, Warren Beatty! Oh, fuck yes! Can we have Warren Beatty playing a guy who's got, like, who is senile? Because that would just totally work for me.
I think we need to have Clint Eastwood, Jack Nicholson, Warren Beatty, and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. Yeah. Jack Nicholson. Brilliant.
It's brilliant. Look, I think this is, I'm down with this. And basically, Vaughn believes, according to this article that was on Deadline, he actually believes that it's films like The Expendables that have really opened this up to him. Because it proved that audiences don't mind bringing back the elderly, basically. Yeah. You know? Selena's sitting there going, "Yeah, I remember that one. That's all the wrinkles." So,
Too many unattractive people on one screen at once.
But it made a bucket of money, so it looks like they're going to bring back the wrinkles for the next one. I think it's a really interesting idea, and I really want to. It says here it's based on a yet-to-be-published comic book.
Yeah.
So we haven't even seen Golden Age.
It's weird though, because that premise sounds surprisingly similar to a comic I remember someone telling me about ages ago about a whole lot of retired superheroes.
I read about the story though. It's very Mark Millerish in its kind of mentality though. It sounds like the concept behind the actual comic book is that they actually help their younger kids, like their underkids, to fuck up the world. So not really similar to, I think, what you're thinking of.
Yeah, no. Because I don't know, it's just something about that.
Yeah,
sounded like, I was like, where have I heard about that before?
Yeah. So. Matthew Vaughn has an obsession with these kind of things. Yeah.
He has an obsession with the slightly off-center.
You know what he's like? He's very much, he's like the comic book version of Slumdog Millionaire.
Danny Boyle?
Danny Boyle, like where he likes to take a concept and then just twist it.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, take the idea of, you know, young comic book heroes or something, and then twist it. Or
Calisynthesis, it's like Red for superheroes. Damn straight.
Well, actually, he quotes that in his article as well. He says that was another one that he was suggesting.
What now? What he's saying? He's saying it's on US iTunes. Oh, that's another movie. Yeah, something else. It's another movie they're talking about. Yeah. Okay, now the moment we've come to expect. Not to expect. That's not what I wanted to say at all. Now the moment that we've all been expecting. Waiting for. Thank you. That's what I'm looking for. Is the Thor trailer? Now this is a new trailer. This only came out. Now I gotta say we've been underwhelmed by Thor. The first trailer came out, and
And then we're like, what, Natalie Portman?
Yeah, actually, the first images came out, and I think we all were kind of uniformly like, it all looks kind of plasticky and fake-looking, and we weren't too impressed. And then the first trailer came out, and we were like, oh, this doesn't actually look that good, you know? And then the Super Bowl trailer came out, which was just the first trailer recut, and I went, well, it works better, faster, because it's over sooner. You know?
Ow.
Snap.
However, this week, the second trailer came out, and I gotta say that they're focusing more on Natalie Portman, obviously.
Oscar. And action.
Thank God.
Oscar and, like, big scope action, big which scope is what we action. Want.
And most importantly, humor. There's some humor now. It's not looking as quite as bleak as it did before. Yeah.
They have the sassy young chick who's slightly indie, like ripping lines every 10 seconds. It's gonna be fun.
Natalie Portman using her taser on him and stuff like that. Yeah. So let's have a look at this real quick, and then we'll come back and talk about this. So this is the new Thor trailer from this week.
News coming out of southwestern United States. A series of disturbances coming in from all around the
tri-state. Sir, we found it.
Government agencies have now cordoned off the area and are
Jane, I think you want to see this. You all right?
You dare threaten me, Thor, with so puny a weapon?
What? He was freaking me out.
Where did he come from?
Name?
He said it was Thor.
For a crazy homeless person, he's pretty cut.
How'd you get inside that cloud?
Also, how could you eat an entire box of Pop-Tarts and still be this hungry?
Just drink, I like it. Another!
This is going on Facebook, smile.
Your ancestors called it magic, and you call it science. Well, I come from a place where they're one and the same.
But who are you, really?
You'll see soon enough.
God, I hope you're not crazy.
Do you swear to guard the lives of the innocent and preserve the peace?
I swear.
I will destroy their kind.
You can't kill an entire race.
And die with them.
These people are innocent. I have no plans to die today.
And there you have it. So that's the new trailer. And we're saying it's the hammer actually now feels like it's got weight, as Josh was saying. That sound is fantastic on it. It looks like it's heavily based on the J. Michael Straczynski run of last year, I think it was, where it basically brought Thor back.
Last year and 2009, I think.
Yeah, I think it started 2009. Yeah. I think it's now up to, because it was starting from issue 600, I think it was. So I think it's 600 to 612 or something like that, was Straczynski's run where he brought Asgard to Arizona, basically.
If you haven't read them, I'd recommend it. Yeah. And even if you're not a Thor fan, which I wasn't before I read these comics, they're really, really good. Because I've never been into Thor, and I would really recommend them if you're not, to get you into Thor, because they're really well written and really well illustrated.
I liked Thor in the early 80s. I went off Thor. It all went just a little bit too out there for me. And the J. Michaels brought me back.
Also, the Ultimate Avengers series, I like how they handled Thor in that.
Yes. Yeah. I like the fact that they
make him, their whole thing where they flip it on heads and make everyone believe that he's actually insane.
He's just
nuts. Insane.
Yeah. which is also quite good, too. Yeah. So I think this Thor, by now looking at the images that we're actually seeing, that little town looks just like the town in J. Michael Straczynski's Thor. I think we're looking at a crossover, because most of the Marvel films are based on the Ultimate series. Excuse me. So I think what we're doing is a crossover between that series and the Ultimates. To do it. I think that's because J. Michael Straczynski's Thor doesn't have a lot of Odin, because Odin's gone by that stage. So I think that's where the Ultimate stuff comes in, where we've got where we've got Thor and Asgard, and then we've got all of this stuff with the with the Destroyer and all that sort of stuff. That Destroyer looks awesome, by the way. That big robot-y creature that comes up and starts destroying. And those who are really quick watching that trailer, you can find it embedded at geekactually.com, and who are fans of Thor will notice that you can actually see the Heroes 3 in the background in one shot.
Very similar to the Straczynski comics. Like, even the design of the costumes, Loki's costumes, the Destroyer's
Thor's costume.
And Thor's, really similar. And this, just the way the town looks, which is what we were commenting during the thing. It looks almost exactly the same.
Just a quick note, for those who don't know who J. Michael Straczynski is, he writes comic books, but he's also a television writer, and he created and wrote 90% of the episodes of the five-season run of Babylon 5. That was his series. And he is one of the most unprecedented writers, in the sense that when he did Babylon 5, normally when you create a series, you write a Bible, then you bring in lots of writers to write the series for you, whereas he actually wrote almost all the episodes himself. And that's really unheard of in television, where somebody comes in and goes, I'll just write them all. You know, because normally you get in other writers and fresh blood. He's just a compulsive writer. He just writes nonstop. And he's been writing a lot of comic books. He's also done some reboots of Superman. He writes for both Marvel and DC. And he's really sought after in the comic book world. He's the one who actually rebooted Wonder Woman. So, you know, this new Wonder Woman, new look Wonder Woman, that was actually Straczynski's writing. He's the one who rebooted her.
Read that.
It's interesting. I'm not entirely sold. We'll come back to that, because our next story is Wonder Woman. Funnily enough, if you remember back film, actually a few weeks back, we said that David E. Kelly had written a pilot for Wonder Woman. And he was shopping it around all the networks, and basically all the networks were passing on it and saying no, they didn't want it. Now, David E. Kelly, for those who don't know, is the one, creator of Ally McBeal and Chicago Hope and Picket Fences, and he wrote the feature film Lake Placid.
Resume.
He's an amazing, an amazing
what a jump,
writer.
Though. It's that Lake Placid.
I know, I'm like,
well, Lake Placid was so unusual, and yet it was so funny in many ways. I quite enjoyed it. Anyway, NBC finally did pick it up, and the pilot is being shot. Now, there was talk at one point McGee might direct it, but McGee has had to move on. So it is now happening. David E. Kelly's script is being directed by, I can't remember the director's name.
Bill DeElder?
Something, yeah, I think so. I think
Bill
DeElder. Yeah, I think so.
I think I just saw it down there as well.
Where are we looking, sorry? Yes, there we go. Produced and written by. No, I can't find the director's name at this point. But anyway, the bigger news is that Wonder Woman's been cast. Her name is Adrienne Palicki, and anybody who watches Friday Night Lights will know Adrienne Palicki. And I'm hoping they give her brown hair, because Wonder Woman is not a blonde.
She's blonde.
She's got the boobs for it, though. But apparently, the script leaked.
Yeah.
And the script got analyzed, and now that we've started to read the script, we start to go, hang on.
Yeah.
And this is as only David E. Kelly could do it. Apparently, according to this article, it says, a vigilante crime fighter in L.A., but also a successful corporate executive and a modern woman.
God, it's Ellie McBeal, trying to
balance all of her elements, the elements
Does
of her extraordinary life.
Does she have three sassy talking friends?
It says here, Palicki will also play Wonder Woman's two alter egos. A mega billionaire CEO named Diana Themyscira and Diana's plain Jane assistant, Diana Prince. What the hell? This is not Wonder Woman.
I can understand if they tried to modernize it. And you had me at the crime-fighting thing, and then the alter ego thing, and then the, I have to balance my sassy friends and my sex and life.
And apparently
with
there are many conversations. Fuck off.
Sex in the City.
I know, it's going to be Sex in the City,
I haven't managed,
like Wonder Woman.
I haven't managed to find the script yet, but I read the breakdowns of it, and it is quite literally that. It is Ally McBeal / Sex in the City / they sit around, her and her friends talk about the boys
that.
And their lives.
No,
and all this, and you sit there and go, what the, this is, and she's apparently not an Amazon. She's just a vigilante crime fighter. And you sit there and go, this isn't Wonder Woman.
Maybe it's just an excuse to have her prancing around the city in very little.
Maybe, I don't know. What's the costume going to be? Is she going to wear a costume? Is it going to be like Smallville? Will she just walk around in her little jacket or something? You know, I'm sorry. You just look at it and go, you know what? You had the perfect opportunity to bring Wonder Woman back to screen.
Yeah.
Why are we fucking...
And they could have changed it up, and they could have modernized it, and they could have made it really interesting, but they fucked it!
They fucked it up! Do you know what? All I could think is, give J. Michael Straczynski, who has experience making television shows, and he wrote the rebooted Wonder Woman, let's give him Wonder Woman and say, go make a TV series. You've made genre television, you know? It's like, I look at it and go, this has disaster.
They can talk about Prada shoes and their sex lives.
Do you know what this has? This has the remake Bionic Woman series all over it, you know, which was an awful show as well. And you just look at it and go, really? We had an opportunity to finally bring a superhero back to screen, and you're not going to do it. You're just going to screw it up, you know? So anyway, I'm not happy. And I want to see more about this because I actually had hopes. When I heard David E. Kelley was writing it, I thought, wow, we actually get some quality writing, you know? But he's decided to do
the
whole...
It's kind of sad. It's like they assume that we don't want... I don't want to get a soapbox here or anything, but it's like we assume that we don't want to watch a female hero or lead character unless she appeals to shopping and fucking all the time. It's like, no, you can write a really interesting female lead character without it being Sex and the City.
What?
Like, why
is
that suddenly
Buffy.
So trendy?
Buffy, but do you know what the shades of?
Bring back Joss Whedon and his badass ass-kicking chicks.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Come on.
Katie and I were talking...
Why does it have to be about the sex and the shoes?
It doesn't. The problem is that you put the wrong team on it. Like, for instance, a man who created one of the worst horror films I saw that year, and Ally McBeal, and you give him a chance to write it. That's where they fucked up. You're supposed to slap this dude on the nose with a freaking piece of newspaper and say no.
Look, it's Katie.
But we didn't, and now we have to reap the benefit.
My lovely wife Katie and I sat and we were watching, and we won't even go into the whys. You know that I watch a lot of crap. We were watching the Supergirl movie again the other day. And it's funny because I said to her, I said, you know, it's really interesting. In the comic books, now I've never been a huge Supergirl fan, but in the comic book, Supergirl kicks ass. Mm. She is a female Superman, right?
Yeah.
And she can lift buildings and she can, you know, smack planets out of orbit. And, you know, she is a female Kryptonian. And for some reason, as soon as they decided, it's the same producers, the same team behind Superman the movie. But as soon as they decided that it had to be a girl, they had to turn it into a fluffy fairy tale and she had to do aerial ballet. And you go, really? So we have so little respect for girls that we assume that we have to turn it into a fairy tale if it's about a girl.
Main characters, though. It's sort of interesting. It's like I've seen some fucking brutal supporting roles in some things, like really ballsy chick roles. But they're always the supporting roles. Hmm. They're never the lead.
I just look at it and go, what an empowered role model you could give young girls by giving them a true Supergirl.
Yeah,
you know?
And it's like, I don't care about their fucking sex lives. I don't care about their shopping. Like, that's the reason why I hate shows like Sex and the City, is because it's such bullshit.
Yeah.
But you see, the big problem is, Celine,
it's that I'm not like normal chicks.
Well, A, you're not like normal chicks, and reality is, if it's a girl situation,
they want it to appeal to other girls. They want it to appeal to the mainstream woman, which
unfortunately
reveres Sex and the City as
the
fucking
city.
Bible
exactly.
For some bizarre reason.
Maybe we're trying to do like a slow but sure steady grab so that we can grab all those girls and pull them over to the
dark side. Mm. So, like, maybe if we start out like this, and when they're just getting used to the shoes and the thing, wham, she goes to another planet, and it's like, now what? And it's like, they either keep watching and we've got them. Or, you know.
Now, I got to ask, say one thing, because Joss Whedon's name was mentioned, which is Joss Whedon has the ass-kicking hot chicks, except in the Avengers. Now, he wrote the script. Mm. Now, at the moment, all we have is Scarlett Johansson. Okay, she kicks ass and she looks great as Black Widow. Mm. But where are all the ass-kicking hot chicks? There are other female superheroes in the Avengers, yeah. You know? Why have we not heard or seen anything about this?
Well, we might hear, though, after stuff like Thor, because, I mean, we're gradually introducing all these characters. Mm. Have they cast the whole film yet?
Well, they brought out the core cast, which we assume is the Avengers, at Comic-Con, and there was one girl.
Yeah.
Now, we've added a second female to the cast, which is Cobie Smulders, which is another S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, but she's not a superhero. But of the Avengers, the actual superhero team, there aren't any.
Yeah.
Because unless you count Black Widow, who is a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent.
To be fair, what they might be doing is they have to grab the core audience at the moment, right? So you want to grab the heavy hitters, and you want to grab your Iron Mans and stuff like that. And I have to say, in the Avengers, yes, there are females in the Avengers, but they are the smaller characters. Mm. So these are the stuff you can leak over time. Hmm. You can be like, and here's Wasp, and here's...
Yeah, but I'm surprised we haven't started hearing these leaks. This film goes before cameras in April. It's only a month away from rolling.
Yeah.
You would think we would have heard more about casting by now. You know?
Well, maybe it'll just be a whole lot of dudes. Maybe that's the market they're going for.
Yeah, it seems to be. That is the market they're going
for. Yeah, like the market they're going for is your average comic game.
I'm just surprised that Joss Whedon hasn't pushed harder.
But, I mean, he also might be slightly more under the thumb with the companies who are producing it, saying, well, no, I think all we need is the one chick in the cat suit, and that'll give everyone enough of a boner to keep them interested.
Yeah, yeah, but the other thing is that you've got the fact that they are following, apparently, quite closely the storyline from the movie that we saw, the little cartoon movie, which is that it's the core group of them, and it's a focus on them coming together.
Callisynth in our chat room.
Only the one girl. It was just Wasp.
Callisynth in our chat room has said, I wonder if the change is due to Dollhouse not working out. Mm. And Callisynth also says, I don't know how well Tigra would play to a mainstream audience.
My point exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, Wasp is the only girl that I ever liked.
Well, and I'd say Wasp is also important because Wasp is a founding member of the Avengers in the comics.
Damn right.
Why don't we have Wasp? You know, she is one
I reckon
of the core.
She's got to be there.
Her and Scarlet
she's very
Witch.
Small, though. We might not have seen her at Comic-Con.
That's true.
Oh, see what I did there.
You guys suck.
All right, let's go on to our list of five on that note, because that humor was
That was just daddy humor.
Okay, our list of five this week is five sports films, because, of course, we reviewed the
What if I only have three?
Well, then you're a loser.
Okay. Hey, she came in the last 2 minutes.
Whoa now. I didn't get the email beforehand, all right?
Well, considering I didn't know you were going to be on the show until 5 minutes before the show, if you've only got three, then come in on number three.
Cool.
All right.
All right? So we'll start it off and say number five, and this week I'm going to start, because I always get Josh to start. So this week I'm going to start, and I'm going to say that you'll actually find that a lot of my sports-themed films actually tend to be comedic. In value, because I think sports and comedy go together really well.
So.
That's not to say all of them, but comedy does play a factor here. And I'm going to say my number five is actually the hockey film with Paul Newman from the 70s, Slapshot, which I just love. This is a film where they're basically just this completely down on their luck team, and they basically resorting to dirty tricks and stuff to try and save their hockey team. Mm. And it is wild fun, held together by Paul Newman. So that's my number five.
My number five is, and like I said, all of my films are the ones that either have something bizarre that just totally takes them out of the sports genre, or things that fight against the sports genre.
Okay.
So my number five is Space Jam.
Whee!
Fuck you, if you don't like it.
I love Space Jam.
I thought it was awesome, okay? I may have been young at the time, but it still holds up.
I know. We've watched it a few times. Nikki loves it. He watches it on and on. You don't have a five, so we'll come back to you. My number four, going for the slightly more serious tone, I think is Raging Bull.
Mm.
Now, the only reason it's not higher on my list is that it's not a film I watch very often, because it's actually a hard watch.
Mm.
But, once again, if you want a film with stellar performances and a stellar script and a stellar piece of directing, Raging Bull was considered to be, by the American Film Institute, one of the greatest film of the 1980s.
Hmm.
So, and it is a really amazing film to watch with brutal fight scenes.
Yeah.
Slow motion brutality taken to its nth degree.
Yeah.
And this is also the film, of course, that De Niro put on 50 pounds or something like that to play LaMotta in his heyday. What is it? In his retirement years, he put on the huge gut. That's not makeup. He put on the weight.
Yeah.
So it's really good. True story of Jake LaMotta. Your number four?
My number four is another comedy as well, which is Mean Machine, which I have seen the original with Burt Lancaster.
Not Burt Lancaster, Burt Reynolds.
Burt Reynolds, The Longest Yard, and I hate that film. I don't think it's fun. I don't enjoy it. I would just sat there the whole time going, you guys are trying to be funny, and he is not funny. I'm sorry. I just can't take him seriously. And then out of nowhere, they do the English soccer hooligan version, and I was just like, all right, this is good. And Vinnie Jones, just awesome. He is just, it's just the first thing where I was like, who is this guy? I've seen him hundreds of times.
Okay, so, and on the flip side of that, I love The Longest Yard.
Oh, wow.
And I think Burt Reynolds is actually very funny in the film, and it didn't make my list, but it is in my honorary mentions.
Oh.
I hated the Adam Sandler version.
Oh, yeah. You're not going to hear it probably.
But I did really like the British version.
Exactly.
And the reason why the British version is called Mean Machine is because overseas, The Longest Yard was called Mean Machine.
Oh, okay.
They actually changed. In Australia, when it was originally released, it was called Mean Machine. The Longest Yard was its US title, but for some reason they decided, because I guess not everybody uses yards or understands American football, so they changed the title. Anyway, but yes, no, good choice.
Yeah.
But I disagree with you completely about the original Longest Yard.
It's fine. Maybe it's a generation.
It's a cultural time, generational thing. I'm old, did I tell you that?
I think I tell you that more than you tell me that.
All right, my number three is a basketball film, which basketball, like The Fighter, basketball takes a back seat. It is actually about the characters. It's actually Hoosiers. And the reason why this film is so amazing, if for no other reason to see this film, is it is an amazing performance by Dennis Hopper as the alcoholic, boozy character who finds redemption.
Yeah.
Terrific film about team spirit and about trying to get trying to achieve, basically. Really, really good stuff. So if you haven't seen Hoosiers, well, we're seeing. Made in the 80s. Your number three... No, we'll go with Josh first. We'll keep in order. We'll keep in order. Yeah. Okay.
Pass the dookie on the left-hand side.
My number three is a film called Coach Carter, which was Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, yes, I've seen it. Good film.
It was one that, very much like The Fighter, I was really reserved to go into it. I was trying to think of the name of this for ages, and funny enough, when you said that, it just came to me. I adored this film because it was a it's kind of like him replaying his character from 187. It's kind of like that really hard-ass person that just got everyone to do what they were supposed to do. And it's just, I love the kind of underlying tone, especially because everyone that's in this film is kind of a bit of a douche usually. Yeah.
No, I saw it at the cinema. I actually really enjoyed that. Mm. It was one of those kind of films that came out of nowhere, you know?
Yeah.
I liked it a lot. Celine joins the party. Yay! Number three!
The only film I've ever seen where I haven't wanted to violently stab Keira Knightley in the eyeball is Bend It Like Beckham, and that's my number three.
Oh, good film. I forgot all about it.
Yeah, and as I think 15-year-old chick when it came out, I was like, yeah, I don't even like sports, but these girls are cool. I saw it with my dad, and we really enjoyed it.
It was actually a really good film. And once again, like The Fighter, the sports isn't actually what the film is about.
And Keira Knightley's totally bearable because she plays an annoying little fucking British tomboy, and that totally suits her.
Yes. No, really good film. It's unfortunate because the director of that went on to do Bride and Prejudice, the Bollywood film. You're thinking, oh, really? Dear. Okay, my number two is a 70s film about the Tour de France. Not actually about the Tour de France, more about a boy who wants to ride in the Tour de France, called Breaking Away. Now, this was a really good film. It's a film that very little... Actually, I say 70s. It could actually have been early 80s. I forgot to get the years on these. But it's directed by... you'd know his name if you hear it, and now I've completely frozen on his name.
Cool. You can look it up.
I'll look it up in a minute. But basically, he directed a film called The Return of the Secaucus 7. And later, in the 80s, he actually directed a film which isn't as stupid as it sounds, called Brother from Another Planet, which is actually...
Brother from Another Mother?
Brother from Another Planet, basically about an alien coming down to Earth who takes the form of a black guy. And it's actually a very interesting film, very good film. It's a good film. Because it's all about this idealistic idea of what the Tour de France is and his training for the Tour de France and then learning to be disillusioned by the fact that they're all douches.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, so it's a, no, it's a very good film, though. Your number two.
My number two is Raging Bull. Raging Bull is a great film. It is so hard to watch. Like, you sit down and you know what you're in for when you go into it, and it's a grueling process, but it's one of those things where when you kind of get to the end of it, you're kind of like, I'm very glad I did that. It's kind of like when I watched the film that you've seen like twice or three times in a row, which was the 4-hour epic.
Once Upon a Time in America.
It's like, you know, when you sit down that this is going to be a long ass film.
Yeah.
But when you actually sit down and give it the time, it's like, wow, this is actually worth every second of it. And yeah, so definitely.
Your number two.
My number two is everybody's favorite film about sports championships, Karate Kid.
I love the Karate Kid.
Oh yeah. Wax on, wax off.
Yeah, Karate Kid was
like, it's gotta be on the list.
No, dude,
I'm completely wrong. Can I just correct myself? You know, because, you know, once again, we do a live show and we don't do our homework beforehand. Yeah. I was under the impression Breaking Away was directed by somebody completely different to who it is. Forget everything I said. It's directed by Peter Yates.
Oh.
Peter Yates, by the way, who went on to direct that awesome fantasy trash in 80s Krull.
Yes.
No, Breaking Away is a very different film to that.
I cannot believe I've seen that film.
Yeah. Krull?
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
We're going to have to sit down and watch that.
We got a copy of that one. I think we should dig that out.
I'll be watching that next couple of days, actually. Anyway, so yes, the Breaking Away is Peter Yates. It was 1979. Okay, sorry. Cool. Sorry to interrupt. Continue. Karate Kid. Fantastic movie.
What else is it? I'm sorry. If you haven't seen Karate Kid, go fucking hang yourself on a tree, because really, it's just not worth living
or it's a second option.
Or, you know, go rent it out.
Go watch it. Yeah.
And then you won't feel the need to kill yourself.
Yep. Hopefully. If nothing else, you will get every 80s reference that has happened since then about this film, which is pretty much about...
In the past 30 years, like, come on, get with the times, people.
Yeah, and it's just, it was part of that, and like I said, I actually left it out because I'm really trying to avoid those cliche movies, but out of it, they're
them all.
No, but they're the icon ones, you know what I mean? They really are, they are for a reason really, really famous. You know what I mean? It's just like they're uplifting. They're those... They're everything that was trying to be something in the 80s. It was like telling you that it was all right to strive for something. Yeah. And you know what? They deserve credit.
That was totally cool.
Yeah, and that's why anyone can get it, because it's like The Fighter. It's like it's a movie that transcends what it is and just becomes a conversation about being nothing and becoming something.
Yeah. That's true. Now, I'm going to, for my number one, I'm going to give you the film that The Karate Kid is based on and say that my number one sports film is the original Rocky.
Which is like the adult version.
It's like, and funnily enough, directed by the same man.
Yeah.
John G. Avildsen made the original Rocky, and he also made The Karate Kid.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, Josh is absolutely correct. It's almost like he said, now we need the teen version.
Yeah.
Because The Karate Kid and Rocky follow very similar ideas.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, there's a lot of people out there going, Rocky, that's really good. So many people nowadays forget about the original Rocky because their impression of Rocky is Rocky 3, Rocky 5, Rocky 4, Rocky... You can forget...
Rocky in space.
Rocky
in
space.
Rocky X.
You can forget all of the other Rockies, okay?
Yeah.
The first Rocky, made in 1970, whatever it was, I think it was like 76 or 75 or whatever it was a real rags-to-riches film. It was a unique film. It was written by Stallone. Even the story behind Rocky is inspirational. And spoilers for a film that is over 30 years old, the most amazing thing about Rocky...
Again, get with the times.
He lost. And that was the thing about Rocky, was it wasn't about...
How many people do you know that forget that?
I think because in every Rocky film after that, he wins.
He won,
And the thing about the original Rocky, it was never about winning the bout.
The original Rambo. Everyone just forgets that film. It's like that whole movie is such an anti-war movie. And everyone's like, yeah, Rambo. It's like at the end, he has a nervous breakdown.
First Blood is an amazing film. It's a really dark movie. Really good film. And so is the original Rocky. In fact, the original Rocky was nominated for an Oscar, and he was nominated for his screenplay, and he was nominated for acting in this film. It is an amazing film. He wrote it himself. John G. Avildsen came in to direct it. And this is a film that was all about a loser, a bruiser, a guy who used to break people's fingers to collect money for a loan shark who gets given an opportunity to fight the champion. And everybody thinks it's a joke except him. And he takes it so seriously. And he says to his girlfriend, he just wants to go the distance. He just wants to prove that he can do it. And he does 18 rounds toe-to-toe with the champion. Yeah. He loses by points, but he goes the distance, and that's all he wants to prove.
Yeah.
And it is such an... And this is the that whole thing at the end of Rocky. You just want to stand and cheer. You want to be there with that man. And it's like you sit there and go, God, what a feat he did. And Stallone puts in a great performance, as does Talia Shire, as does Burt Ward. It's a great film, which has been so diluted over the years.
And by, so much parody to it as
and
well.
And so which much parody, never, which because never helps. Of all of the of all these films that came since.
Yeah.
But I highly recommend, if you have not seen Rocky, because of the stigma attached to Rocky of all these sequels, throw away all of that, forget about all that, and just sit down and watch the original Rocky.
Yeah.
Just quickly in the chat room, Basketball, Callison. Man, I can't believe I left that off my list. It's like the best sports film ever made.
And Cool Runnings.
And Cool Runnings.
And if pool is a sport, The Hustler, which is also fantastic. I don't think pool is a sport, though. That's like putting bowling. All right, your number one.
Or golf.
My number one was interesting, dude, because...
I ranted about my number one.
Similar thing's going to happen here, because it was funny when I actually said, was mulling over this list in my head, and I was actually putting it together. Something happened that I hadn't thought about, which is... Our review for this film was not, like, amazing. Like, it wasn't, like, breakthrough, right? Mm. But for a film that does most of the cliches of a film, based on a true story, as they all are, it's the only one, like Rocky, outside the Rocky-esque, you know, staple cut, you know, paste, different storyline over these points, Blindside. Because it's just... Where the more I thought about it, the more there is a solid place in my heart that just really loved that film.
And it's in fact, Blindside is on my honorary mentions.
It's just
missed the list.
As an actual like movie, it is one of those ones that, God forbid, but if I ever have kids, will be one of those films that I will show them because it's just, it's our generation's version of, you know, one of those kind of films. It's like the Rocky films or anything like that. It's just a great piece about something that broke.
We actually gave it a relatively good review,
did that with top of the list kind of stuff.
Carlos, I believe, and I think he was actually Pablo.
Yeah.
And I believe he was more down on it than we were. I think we were actually more positive about it. It wasn't. We actually said it wasn't a world changer. But it is a film, you're absolutely right, that stays with you.
Yeah,
and you
it does.
Think about it, and you think about it, and you think about it. And I've been trying to get my lovely wife Katie to watch this for ages, because I said, this is a film right up your alley.
Yeah.
And for those out there who think that it's just one of those Sandra Bullock movies, it's not.
And Sandra Bullock is very different in this.
Yeah, she's very different, and she's really good. You know?
See, it's a pity I missed it, because you guys gave it such a rave review.
Yeah.
And at the time, I just... I don't know. I think I just happened to miss that movie club. So,
yeah, no, it's actually a really good film. And it is well worth having a look at. And yes, as I say, it just didn't make my list because... There's other films. And I also look at it and go, football is such a backseat to that film. It's really about the people that it didn't quite make my list. You're number one. And she's laughing. I love it.
I'm really sorry about this, guys. Quack. Quack, 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 quack.
Careful, careful.
My ducks. One.
Damn straight.
Yeah.
In Australia, known as Champions.
Yeah.
But original title, Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
The greatest film ever made, David.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but I think the first one is actually really good.
It's such trash. And it's just so like, there's like, the kids are all such stereotypes, and it's just so good.
It's so much fun. Look, I put Mighty Ducks up there with the original, not the remake so much, but the original Bad News Bears.
Yeah.
That came out in the 70s with Walter Matthau.
It was on my list, and then I got rid of it.
The Bad News Bears.
I'd rather stick to some, you know.
Yeah, I love the Bad News Bears. I think the original 70s version, and I think the Richard Linklater version with Billy Bob Thornton is actually so disappointing when you had such good source material to come from, and a really good young cast, including a very young Jackie Earle Haley as a kid, which is really interesting. But, I'm with you. I think Mighty Ducks is a fabulous film. I think it's so much fun.
Yeah.
Okay. You know? Yeah. Sorry, guys, for the loudness. Sorry about that.
That's going to throw out the levels.
Yeah.
You woke me up.
I'm right there with you. I think it's a good film. I wouldn't have made my list, but it was a good
film. I only had three, so there.
Yeah, there you go.
Take that.
Now, I had some honorary mentions, as I said before. I think I've mentioned them all now. I had one more. I had those two. We had Longest Yard and Blindside. I also had Wildcats with Goldie Hawn.
Oh my God. You know, I saw that movie when I was like 12, and I was like, this is brilliant. I actually thought of that on this list. I was like, what was that movie with Goldie Hawn? And I didn't have my computer, so I couldn't look it up.
Yeah, if you ever get a chance to see Wildcats is a lot of fun.
It's so fun. I love Goldie Hawn. That woman is just brilliant.
This is like at the peak of her popularity.
With her 20-inch smile.
Yes, just pretty much.
Takes up the entire screen.
She's basically forced to coach a boys football team, and nobody takes
her
seriously.
But aren't they all black or something
they're,
as well?
They're ghetto.
Like, yeah, they're all so really
Hispanic,
ghetto,
black,
and she's
and
like,
yeah.
This and she's white, this lily white. Chick, and she's like this tall, yeah.
And she does it, and she earns their respect, and
it's
a really
good
film.
And then she's got her like abusive ex-boyfriend, and like they fuck him up and stuff. It's just so good.
And was it the line? You owe me one watch. No, and Callison just said Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
And I didn't put Happy Gilmore because I'm not a huge Adam Sandler fan, but yes, Happy Gilmore has some fun moments. Price is wrong, bitch. Anyway, but okay.
No, you're wrong, bitch. Oh man, hearing him say that was just the highlight of that film for me. Just him getting up and kicking the crap out of Adam Sandler.
All right, so I think that's it. I think we're going
to
move ourselves
out
of here.
Get out of here because I'm going to melt into the
It is starting to get very hot. We'll just do a very quick housekeeping section. And say agree or disagree with us or anything that we have to say or our film reviews or anything else. I don't care. If you just want to say hi. All right, send us an email at feedback@geekactually.com or drop us a voicemail at 02-801-13167. Merchandise, fan pages, Twitters, Tumblr accounts, everything else, just go to geekactually.com. You'll find it all there. You can also find our other show, which is our revamped Geek Actually Geek show, where we talk about a little bit of tech, a little bit of weird, a bit of geek, where we just have a bit of fun with that. Everything's on geekactually.com, or you can search for our podcast on iTunes. We also just this week recorded a special Tron show with Fox 4649 from Real Junkies. Do check that out. It's on the Film Actually feed. It's a really good special. I really enjoyed that a lot. And you can also watch this show live. Remember, we start our recording day at 12 p.m., typically 12 p.m. every Saturday.
Ish.
That's why I said typically.
Australian
Eastern Daylight Savings Time, actually, dear.
So look that shit up.
That's UTC plus 11, so you can do your own calculations. Geekactually.com/live. And we also have a few things we need to plug. First thing we'll plug, weekendronin.com. Find the Real Junkies podcast. The boys drink tequila and review films, and they're a lot of fun to listen to. And we love them, guys. They gave us a big loving shout-out this week, so we love you guys back.
Yeah. And check out the Tron show as well, which
and
has
do,
them.
Yes, do check out the Tron show. It's got one of them on there. It's got one quarter
and the
of
rest.
Of,
yeah, and the rest of them in the chat room.
And the rest of them in the chat room. That's right.
Yeah.
Rachel over at the Funky Film Show, Thursdays on Radio Fremantle 107.9 FM, or you can listen to the episode later at radiofremantle.com. And Josh?
RawDLC.com, it's a gaming website. Come check us out. We've got a whole bunch of new cool reviews up there. And also we go out at 8 p.m.
Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time.
What he said. as Celine said, go figure it out. So yeah, check that out. Also, we have the latest issue of Arbiter currently on the front page. I think it's still on the front page.
No,
might have just slipped off. Anyway,
the subscription box is on the front
page. Yeah. Yeah, so guys, make sure you check that out. We have a great interview with Jeff Cronenworth, who is a really interesting dude that was the DOP on Social Network and favorite films like Fight Club and So Stuck. Mm. So go check out the article. It's very interesting. And subscribe, which is on the front of the page. We need as many people to do that as possible because we need more subscribers. And Celine.
And Celine's got some pimping.
Right,
Celine's got some pimping.
I've got some pimping, yo. Stop being uncultured and come and support the arts. I've got a website, godhaspinkhair.com. I currently have 3 exhibitions coming up at the moment. So Slam Studio Sydney is happening. So also you'll find that on godhaspinkhair.com and also www.slamstudiosydney.com. All the details for that. That closes on the 25th. Also Verge Gallery, which is a gallery run by the Sydney University Union, has a show called Greatest Hits Volume 2, which is all the grad show works from students around Sydney, from Sydney colleges and universities. They select a few works from grad shows that they like and exhibit exhibit them at Verge Gallery. Again, godhaspinkhair.com. All the details are on there. Anyone and everyone is welcome. There is always alcohol and food at openings. You get boozed up for free, guys. Come on. And also, Rookwood Cemetery have a sculpture walk starting, I think, on the 4th of March, which you might want to look up. I will be advertising that on my website probably in the next couple of weeks, but that doesn't start till beginning of March, so hear about it.
She's so cultured, she makes me feel inadequate.
The underlining thing is, go visit my website, and if you want to add me as a friend on Facebook, please don't just add me. Please tell me who you are, because I get strange men adding me all the time, and a lot of the time they're just strange men. So if you're a strange man but watches the show, say, I'm a strange man and I watch the show, and I will add you.
And if you're not a strange man but you say you watch the show, she'll also add you.
I will also add you. Just let me know.
I've actually tried to stick away from the strange man
part.
Just generally.
But yes, godhaspinkhair.com. It's all there.
Cool. All right. Well, it's hot and we're going to get out of here. We just want to throw out one last little plug, which is attackninja.blogspot.com, which is where you'll find the artwork of Josh Spencer, who also did our cover art, and he's very talented. Go check him out. In the meantime, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we will see you next week. Thank you very much, Celine. Thank you very much, Josh.
Thank you
very much,
chat room. Thank you, chat room.
And we'll see you all next week. Bye now.